Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
Welcome. SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. It is so great to have you with us for the next 3 hours. We're going to be coming at you with empathy and fun and facts and history and all the right arguments you need to slay at your water cooler debates with that coworker who can't spell your correctly. We got a good one tonight. David Corn is going to be here. He was at the courthouse yesterday for the Trump trial. Lee Papa, the rude pundit, returns to our airwaves. And our comedy daddy, Keith Price, in hour three. As always, our most important guest is you guys and your calls. 866-997-4748. Philly. We are coming to Philly. Stephanie Miller and the Sexy Liberal Save the World comedy tour will be in Philadelphia with Live Nation Saturday, the 27th of this month. I am so excited. Haven't played Philly in a while on this tour. We're all thrilled. I hope you'll come. You can go to sexyliberal.com or Live Nation to get tickets. We have some special guests. Glenn Kirshner is going to be joining us. Lindy Lee, who has become one of my favorite flame-throwing tweeters, she'll be with us as well. And our friend JoJo from Jersey will be there. So we're going to have all kinds of superstars from social media and MSNBC. And we'd love to see you guys there, too. The meet and greet sold out. There's still regular tickets. Come on down and join us. It's going to be the political party of the year. Chris Hauselt is our executive producer running this thing out of South Carolina studios. Thea Harper produces our show out of Brooklyn. I come to you today from L.A., Santa Monica, to be specific, and it's been quite a day. We hope to hear from you tonight. We're very excited about our guests. Let's get to it. Let's do a show. The first six jurors have been selected for Donald Trump's New York campaign finance fraud trial. I'm trying to not call it the hush money trial. You know, I'm trying to, like, phrase it more accurately. Like, I'm trying to not call it student loan debt forgiveness, but student loan interest forgiveness, right? Like, you know, try not to call them illegal immigrants. I call them Christian refugees. You know what I mean? And I'm not calling them gullible racists. I'm calling them Trump supporters. So I'm trying in every way I can to be more equitable with my language. But the first six jurors have been selected. They were sworn in after a whole lot of other jurors were removed from the jury pool. There will eventually be a jury of 12 residents of Manhattan, plus a few alternates. The judge is describing this as a case saying that Trump falsified business records to conceal an agreement to unlawfully influence the 2016 election. That's the law. That's the charge. It's not about sex. It's not about hush money. Falsifying business records to conceal an agreement to unlawfully influence the 2016 election. And just like Al Capone, dude left quite a paper trail. Joe Biden, on the other hand, is actually doing some stuff. Can you handle some positives here? Joe Biden went to Pennsylvania today to pitch his tax plan, which stands in stark contrast to the zombie version of trickle-down economics alive and festering in the modern GOP.
Think what happens when the factory closes in Scranton or anywhere around the country, when a school is underfunded, when inequity grows larger and larger. It puts the middle class further and out of reach and rips the dignity and pride and hope out of communities all across the country, including right here in Pennsylvania. Folks, trickle-down economics failed the middle class. It failed America. And the truth is, Donald Trump embodies that failure. He wants to double down on trickle-down. His failure starts with his $2 trillion tax cut that overwhelmingly benefited the wealthiest and biggest corporations and exploded the federal debt when he was president.
I have no notes. I agree with everything the president said. In fact, Biden said at one point, if Trump's stock in his Truth Social company drops any lower, he might do better under my tax plan than his. Ooh, that was so harsh it woke Trump up somewhere. And it's true, Donald Trump's big payday from his filth social going public, it's dwindling. His social media firm shares plummeted again yesterday. By yesterday, the stock had crashed another 20%. It was trading at just 40% of its peak from the end of March. Now, the firm is worth more than $3 billion on paper. But again, last year, it had a revenue of $4 million, losses of $58 million, and Trump owns a majority stake in this prized business, although he's not able to liquidate his shares for about another five more months. So you'd think that Biden was having a better day than Trump. You wouldn't know it from reading the Washington Post. Can I read you two headlines? You know, Washington Post, I understand you don't like being called liberal. And that's the deal with our media. The media is not liberal. Media is terrified of being called liberal. But here's one headline. Strong economy can be double-edged sword for Biden if rates stay high. They keep trying to find ways to say that the economy has recovered and is doing incredibly well under this president and why that's bad. Here's another headline from the Washington Post. You ready for this one? The economy is revving up at a terrible time for Biden. When would be a better time? I mean, would it be better if we were having deflation and unemployment was rising? Or if inflation was rising? If there's no wage growth? If the economy was shrinking? Biden's poll numbers have gone up over the last month. Not a ton, but he's starting to edge out Donald Trump in some of those polls. We don't believe him. So clearly, he's not being harmed by how good the recovery's going. I mean, if you looked at this economic data, let's say you just woke up from a coma and you're looking at all the economic data and you have to guess, okay, who's going to win this election? You'd say, well, the guy who's made the economy better than he found it, right? Because the last three Democratic presidents have all left the economy substantially better than they found it. The last three Republican presidents have all left the economy substantially worse than they found it. So the fact that Joe Biden isn't doing much better in the polls, well, kind of interesting. Here's an actual line from this Washington Post article. The economy's unfettered strength is becoming more of a political liability for the White House. I can't, folks. I can't. And as all this is going on, Donald Trump is relentlessly talking about crime on the campaign trail and migrant crime because we have the undocumented border crossing. So it's migrant crime everywhere. They tried to use baby formula. Remember that 2 years ago? And then Biden fixed it. They tried to use the gas prices. They went down. Last year, inflation. Then inflation went down. Now, it's all about the violent crime in our streets, except from the left-wing rag Wall Street Journal. Headline is, homicides are plummeting in American cities. The number of murders in big cities in the U.S. is falling at its fastest pace in decades. We might see one of the lowest levels of violent crime and homicide since Barack Obama was in office. It's like a 10-year low. And crime is a big concern among voters for this election. And Republicans always beat out Democrats on this. But just imagine if the media decided to report this. Because falling homicide rates takes away another GOP talking point. Murders went down by nearly 20% in 204 cities during the first 3 months of this year, compared to the first 3 months of last year. So at this pace, if it continues, our murder rate could go back to 2014. When a lot of cities had 30-year lows in violent crime. Now, Boston, you know how much crime has dropped there in homicides? 82%. What's going on, Boston? Why are you suddenly getting along? That's the most of any major city. Philadelphia, murders went down 37%. Miami, going down 33%. Houston, 25% drop in homicides. How's the Washington Post going to spin this? Plummeting homicide rates spell doom for Biden re-election. I just can't even. And as all this is going on, the House is trying to have these votes this week on the foreign aid bills after months and months of pretty much not letting a single foreign aid bill come to the floor for a vote. I mean, they work really hard, these Republicans, at not having the work. But because of Iran's strikes against Israel over the weekend, there's a new urgency to get some assistance to Israel. But Mike Johnson says that the aid packages for this week will also include support for Ukraine and Taiwan. And we have certain Republicans who I think more and more, friends, are just owned by Russia. I don't know if it's compromat. I don't know if it's bribes. I don't know if they're just idiots, very prone to suggestion. But during an internal GOP meeting yesterday, confirmed Russian asset Marjorie Taylor Greene said the GOP base doesn't want Ukraine aid. You know why? Because their racist right-wing media has been telling them they don't want Ukraine aid for the last 2 years. Remember that comprehensive foreign aid package that already passed in the Senate? If the House could vote on that, it would be on Biden's desk, like by the end of the week. And that would make this Congress look productive. And we wouldn't be able to make fun of them so much for their inefficiency and circular firing squadness. But that is not the path the Republicans, who are the majority, want. 6 months after first being asked for emergency aid to Israel, the Republicans are trying for the third time to pass anything that Biden would sign. Now, Israel aid would pass easily if it was attached to Ukraine aid. But we already know a lot of these Republicans don't want any more help for Ukraine. These are good Christians who look at what Putin has done, invading a smaller neighbor that never attacked him first, rape, murder, mass slaughter, stealing children. And these good Christians are fine with that. You can look at these Republicans in the House, friends, and know exactly how they would regard Hitler going into Czechoslovakia and Poland 80 years ago. Now, in November, House Republicans passed a standalone Israel aid bill, but they had cuts to the IRS attached to it, and the Senate wasn't going to pick that up. It was stupid. 2 months ago, they tried it again without the cuts, but they wouldn't attach the Ukraine aid. So if Mike Johnson moves forward and helps our allies repel this foreign invader, he could get fired. Marjorie Taylor Greene is threatening to force a vote on his removal as speaker. And wait till you hear who's helping her. I mean, Trump and Marjorie have been helping Putin at every chance they get. Ken Buck, former Republican congressman who just resigned from Congress, he calls her Moscow Marjorie. And he says that she gets all of her talking points from the Kremlin. That's a Republican saying that. And she is doing anything she can do to help Vladimir Putin by making sure our government doesn't help our ally. Johnson said today on Fox Business, what Marjorie has done with the motion to vacate is not helpful for our party. I can just see the Washington Post headline, Dems in disarray. So Johnson is moving these four bills. They're all going to have a ton of amendments, no doubt. But it's the Israel aid bill, the Ukraine aid bill, the Taiwan aid bill, and then this big package that's got a ban on TikTok and a Lend-Lease Act to reduce red tape and more military aid to Ukraine, an authorization for the U.S. to sell seized Russian assets. The sooner Mike Johnson gets these bills to the floor, the more protection he can expect from Democrats, because Democrats are going to be the ones who help him keep his job. Hakeem Jeffries came out and said extreme MAGA Republicans are out of excuses. The Ukrainian people are out of time. And he called this week a Churchill or Chamberlain moment. And he couldn't be more right. This is Neville Chamberlain appeasing 101. Oh, just give Hitler Czechoslovakia. Then he'll be happy and he'll behave. And it's about to get tighter for Mike Johnson, because this Friday, Mike Gallagher leaves Congress. Another Republican, this one from Wisconsin, who is quitting. So guess who just came out today and promised to help Marjorie Taylor Greene fire their second Speaker of the House in 8 months. It is none other than prized Russian asset Thomas Massey from the great state of Kentucky. This guy stood up at the internal Republican meeting today and he demanded Mike Johnson resign And then if, he says, if you resign now, the Republicans will have an easier time picking a new speaker. The balls on this guy. Listen to this slob, Thomas Massie. Here he is climbing aboard the ouster train, telling reporters in the hallway he supports a motion to vacate and he thinks it'll pass.
I have no red lines. It's regardless of what I want, it's going to happen. And when it does happen, it's going to pass. The motion to vacate will pass. And so is there something he could do now? I don't know, possibly. But right now he's talking about some rule that 20 people are already pre-announced they're voting against, like maybe a dozen people.
What if Democrats come to save him here?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
That's going to happen. Believe me, they've already said they would save him. Well, I don't know what to feel here. I mean, on the one hand, it would be hilarious to watch the Republicans punch themselves in the face again and fire another speaker. But you know what? I kind of think I'd prefer getting military aid to Ukraine so they don't have Russia killing them anymore. Now, who is this guy? Thomas Massie. Sound familiar? He should. Rolling Stone headline from 2 years ago. Thomas Massie, long a friend to Russia, votes against resolution supporting Ukraine. This was the initial resolution when Russia first invaded 2 years ago, and it said America stands steadfastly, staunchly, proudly, and fervently behind the Ukrainian people. 425 members of the House voted for this resolution. It was just words. Three voted against it. Those three, Matt Rosendale of Montana, Paul Gosar of Arizona, and Thomas Massie of Kentucky. Now, Massey's already said the U.S. should just leave NATO. He's a pretty evil guy. He's a very evil guy. And he's one of nine House Republicans who voted against a resolution condemning Russia for the abduction of Ukrainian children. Yes, Russia's stealing Ukrainian children like it's Trump and Jeff Sessions at the southern border. Andy Biggs, Eric Burleson, Warren Davidson, Clay Higgins, Matt Rosendale, Chip Roy, Tom Tiffany, and of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie voted against condemning Russia. Not even doing anything. Not even sanctions. Just saying it's wrong to steal children from their parents. They voted against that. This guy Massie is the only member of the House to vote against all four of those bills I listed before. All the resolutions aimed at Russia, including the ones expressing support for Ukraine, banning imports of Russian oil, suspending normal trade relations, he is owned by Vladimir Putin. And he and Marge, apparently, are quite serious about firing the speaker. Now, why? Because it will delay Ukraine aid even more. Now, with all this talk of his head on a platter, Mike Johnson used the GOP weekly presser to let folks know he will not resign. So go ahead, try to fire him.
I am not resigning. And it is, in my view, an absurd notion that someone would bring a vacate motion when we are simply here trying to do our jobs. It is not helpful to the cause. It is not helpful to the country. It does not help the House Republicans advance our agenda, which is in the best interest of the American people here, a secure border, sound governance. And it's not helpful to the unity that we have in the body.
This is insane. Can you believe this? The Republicans are trying to fire this House Speaker after all they put us through last fall. This is going to be messy. Because he's going to need Democrats to defeat this before voting on the foreign aid bills. Again, they're doing this to slow down aid. They're taking a page out of the Trump playbook and just trying to delay, delay, delay. And Marge told several Republicans she could start the clock on a motion to vacate within 24 to 48 hours, which would then force a vote ahead of the aid bills for Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan. It's insane. Chip Roy said, if you want to mention the word Ukraine, you got to deal with the border. Except Chip Roy and the Republicans don't want to deal with the border because they had a draconian right-wing bill to deal with the border. The Democrats were going along with it. And then Donald Trump realized he didn't want the border dealt with. He wanted chaos. I mean, maybe Massey's just playing us and Johnson's playing us. The whole Republican Party. Maybe they're all on this together because they will never support Ukraine. But right now, Mike Johnson faces the most dangerous threat to his job, which he's only had for 6 months. So this is where it's at. And before we go to the break, I want to just play you one more clip. You got to hear this clip of Tom Cotton on Fox News talking tough about the protesters for Gaza who shut down commutes nationwide yesterday. Tom goes beyond implying or suggesting that motorists simply turn into vehicular vigilantes. Give a listen to where the Republican Party is at morally this week.
If something like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge there, let's just say I think there'd be a lot of very wet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by the people whose road they're blocking. If they glued their hands to a car or the pavement, well, probably pretty painful to have their skin ripped off. But I think that's the way we'd handle in Arkansas. And I would encourage most people anywhere that get stuck behind criminals like this who are trying to block traffic to take matters in their own hands. There's only usually a few of them, and there's a lot of people being inconvenienced. It's time to put an end to this nonsense.
You hear that? That's Tom Cotton, who looks like a constipated pencil, encouraging people who are being delayed by nonviolent protest to run over the nonviolent protesters with your car. There is your Republican morality. We'll be right back in just a moment with the great David Korn and your calls. We're at 866-997-4748. This is Progress.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. We're at 866-997-4748. You know what? I almost forgot the Republican All-Star of the Day. I know Tom Cotton kind of gets all the hype, but let's hear it for Ted Cruz, who retweeted an article about himself. Senator Cruz applauds major investment in Texas semiconductor industry. You know where this is going, right? Joe Biden's infrastructure and clean energy bills are pumping $500 billion into various projects nationwide. Half of that $500 billion to Republican and swing states. And this allows Joe Biden to fly all over the country, including in swing states, winning people over. But $10 billion in grants and investments in both Michigan and Carolina, $46 billion in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia, tons in Texas. Jen Granholm has been complaining about all the money they've earmarked for Texas, and Ted Cruz voted against it. Ted Cruz voted against the CHIPS Act. He voted against infrastructure. And now he's taking credit for it. I just can't. Let's go to the phones. Sean in California. Welcome. You're on Sirius XM.
Hey, brother Rafael Eduardo Cruz.
Yes.
Lion Ted. I mean, you can't make up any of this stuff that you're talking about, I'll tell you. It's like, you know, it's like we have the traitors within. We've always been in this big fight, right, for our history of our country. But you never had it where, you know, people are like fighting to take the country down. You know, I mean, they might be fighting because they're so racist they want to keep slavery. But it wasn't like you wanted to destroy. They wanted to leave the country, which would be fine with me if the Confederates want to leave. But right now, it's way beyond the pale. But, you know, once again, I mean, when it comes to Donald bin Laden in court, what do you think about this? I want to put this out there. Someone who's smarter than me can figure this out. There's security cameras in that courtroom, people. FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, okay? This is a public fucking courtroom. I want people to see this knucklehead in court being a five-year-old child, sighing, rolling his head. David Corn would give all the details when he talks, but, you know, I haven't seen it. But, you know, those are our records, okay? We don't have to,
I agree.
I don't know the laws, you know, on that particular subject, but I'll tell you what, I think there's a case to be made that we should all be able to see those security cameras.
I know the case. I'm with you. I think all cases should be on television. I think Supreme Court hearings should be on television. I think executions should be on television. We pay for this stuff. We have a right to see what our tax dollars are funding. Couldn't agree more, but Sean, I think you already know you're going to have to wait for Georgia to have a trial with cameras in the room. I was hoping for cameras in the Jack Smith case because I think the Jack Smith election interference case is going to be the most important trial in the nation's history. But now I'm just hoping we have that trial, cameras or not.
Oh, and they're using the word otherwise. You know, now we're, see, and by the way, you put any kind of opening to the Republican politicians in robes in the Supreme Court, an opening, the word otherwise,
yep.
Right? Which we know it means exactly what it fucking means, that there are other reasons to be stopping a legal proceeding. You know, they're going to do it. I wouldn't put it past them because they're going to do it, and they'll take those serious charges away from all those who have been convicted. But we'll see.
It's good to know the Republicans in the House are learning a lot from Donald Trump's legal antics, and they're learning how to delay Ukrainian aid the way Trump delays trials. Thank you very much for the call. But David Corn is with us, veteran Washington journalist and political commentator. You guys know him as the bureau chief for Mother Jones Magazine, which every one of you should have a subscription to, and his work on MSNBC. He's the author or co-author of four New York Times bestsellers. His book, American Psychosis, is dynamite. It shows the deep-rooted Republican practice of boosting and weaponizing the rage and derangement of the right. David was at the courthouse for day one of this trial, which I'm trying to not call a hush money trial. I'm trying to call it a campaign finance fraud trial. His piece in Mother Jones, Trump's trial marks the return of Individual One. David Corn, what a pleasure. Welcome back to SiriusXM.
Great to be with you. And I'm very ecumenical here. You remember the Saturday Night Live skit? Is it a floor wax? Is it a dessert topping? Is it
new
a floor
shiver?
Wax? Dessert topping. It's both. Well, is it a hush money porn star case or is it an election interference case? Tastes great, less filling. It's both. It's a porn star hush money case and it's an election interference fraud case. I think we can have it always on this one.
Well, it's fascinating watching it. And I have to say, that's the surprising part to me. I was expecting to be very bored by all of this because we already know the details. It's not as sexy as it sounds. But so far, David, it's quite gripping. And I'm curious what your experience was being down at the courthouse yesterday. Were the pro-Trump supporters safe from being vastly overwhelmed and outnumbered by the media that was there? I heard it wasn't a real ton of MAGA loyalists.
There were, you know, dozens at most. I don't think you could even use scores to describe how many Trump supporters had assembled outside the courthouse. So it was, my word was anemic. It was an anemic showing. Now, Trump did not call on people to come. And the interesting thing is, you know, in the last year or two, when, you know, Trump has had trial appointments and other events, and there are sometimes people on the internet in these, you know, Trump chats, Reddit groups and so on. And we should, you know, all gather, we should march, we should assemble. Then there's always a bunch of people say, no, don't do it. It's a trap. They want us to do this so they can round us up and imprison us like they did to the J6 people. And I'm thinking, hey, that shows the system works. I mean, one reason you prosecute 1,000 rioters at the Capitol, insurrectionist rioters, is to be a deterrent so that you show people you can't do this crap. And it seems to have, you know, in some perverse way, to have registered with the more extremist Trump supporters who are now seem kind of scared, shy, paranoid about coming out and supporting him in that fashion. I mean, you know, I'll give him his due. He still gets, you know, relatively big crowds when he goes out and does campaign rallies. But, you know, the couch potatoes who might have been eager to ride to his rescue, at, you know, for rallies and demonstrations are pretty much staying on the couch. And the people who showed up yesterday were people we've seen before in New York at these sort of rallies. It's not organic. You know, some of the New York City, you know, Republicans who are basically all Roger Stone fans, you know, showed up briefly. Laura Loomer, who is, you know, a far right Trump extremist, came and with a bullhorn and, you know, got some media attention. But there were far more reporters showing up at the courthouse than there were Trump supporters. It really is just not much of a story.
Well, you know, we talked last year about this case, about whether it was fortuitous that arguably the least sexy of the big four trials was going to be the one to go first. It was the first indictment. It's the first trial to actually begin. And in many ways, it's a useful trial balloon to see what the crowds will be like, how safe it'll be. And it does sort of seem like for Trump supporters, tepid is the new black. It doesn't seem like anyone's going to be storming a courthouse. But I want to thank you for this piece in Mother Jones, because I think a lot of people have forgotten what individual one refers to. And a lot of our right-wing friends have forgotten that when Michael Cohen went to jail for the exact same crime, they expressed zero outrage at the time. Now we get to remember that Donald Trump has been an unindicted co-conspirator since he was president.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting thing. I'm sure your well-informed listeners realize that there are two components to this case legally. One is whether Trump forged documents, basically business records, to hide the hush money payment to Stormy Daniels. I mean, there's no question that the payment was made to silence her and from talking about her alleged affair with Donald Trump. So right. The question is whether they, by recording these payments as reimbursements to Michael Cohen as a legitimate legal expense, he committed fraud. But for that fraud charge to work in New York state law, it has to be a fraud to cover up another crime. Like, you know, it's not just that you recorded something errantly. It has to be to cover up fraud or another felony. So then what's the felony in this case? The felony in this case is an illegal campaign contribution. And that is that Michael Cohen gave $130,000 to Stormy Daniels to keep her quiet in the last 2 weeks of the campaign. And that would be an in-kind contribution. You are not allowed as an individual to give $130,000 to a campaign, directly to a campaign, either to the campaign as a check or in an in-kind way, which means you provide a service worth that amount of money that the campaign would otherwise have to pay for. Now, of course, people know that you can make gigantic donations to PACs and super PACs and independent expenditures, but you can't do this directly to the campaign. And so Michael Cohen got caught for making this illegal in-kind contribution to the Trump campaign. And he went to jail. It was a felony.
That
he pleaded guilty for this. And in the prosecutors, this was a federal crime, in their court filings, they said that Michael Cohen was directed to commit this crime by individual one, who they didn't name in the filings, but individual one also happened to be somebody who was running for president, who Michael Cohen worked for. So it's pretty clear who individual one was in these filings. And so pause for a second. There's always a rush of outrage and outlandish and sometimes even criminal activity coming from Donald Trump. It's hard to isolate the key moments. But here you had the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Justice Department, in the Trump Justice Department, saying that Donald J. Trump was a co-conspirator in a criminal act. So already, here's the former president, and this happened before he was president, a co-conspirator. So according to the feds and the court that sentenced Michael Cohen, this was a crime. So when he falsified the documents about the payment to this, that would meet the standard to be a violation of New York law. The Trump legal team, it's kind of the same thing.
The same thing.
Trump legal team.
They're being
team
paid
now
with campaign funds, so you're allowed to say that, David.
Yeah, they're going to try to, one of their arguments is going to be that this payment to Stormy Daniels was not an in-kind campaign contribution. It was done to protect Donald Trump's, you know, status with his family and
yes.
his wife, to protect him from being embarrassed.
The guy cares so much about his wife, he's just trying to protect her when he's fucking the porn star after she gives birth.
Make arguments that you know, to the jury here, that's not that this was not a crime that was being covered up. And so it was really interesting on the first day before they moved to the jury selection process. One of the things the two sides, the prosecutors and Trump's attorneys, argued about was to what degree and how they can tell the jury, when they get to this, about Michael Cohen's guilty plea.
Right.
So this is very interesting. So the Trump lawyers want to be able to say that he pled guilty to tax evasion, making false statements to a bank, and lying to Congress, which he did. He pled guilty to all those. But they don't want to say that he pled guilty to a campaign finance violation. And the prosecutors, of course, want to bring that in. And they were arguing, well, we need to do this to show that he did confess and that's one reason he has more credibility than he would otherwise. And Trump's people are trying to keep that out. The judge ruled that if the prosecutors lay the right foundation, they can bring up this guilty plea of Michael Cohen. But they also have to state explicitly to the jurors that you cannot infer Trump's guilt from Michael Cohen's guilty plea. So this will end up being a big deal. But, there's a lot of dust. There's a lot of,
Can I ask you about that? Let me ask you about that particular point, Mr. Korn, because I find that fascinating. You know, a lot of our right wing friends are trying to trivialize this and minimize it. And they keep saying, oh, it's just a paperwork crime. It's just a paperwork crime. Funny thing about paperwork crimes is they tend to leave paper trails. This is how we got Al Capone once upon a time. And I understand that Donald Trump's lawyers are going to be trying to destroy Michael Cohen's credibility by pointing out that he's a felon and that we know he's a liar. But aren't they going to run into the fact that, yes, he was lying on behalf of Trump? How huge is it to you, David, that Michael Cohen is going to be testifying right in front of him?
Now, it is not uncommon for prosecutors to use as witnesses people who commit crimes and who lied about committing crimes. It happens all the time. And, one device they use, because the defense is going to say, oh, he's a perjurer, he's a liar, he's a crook. Mm-hmm. And that's who you're putting up here. And one, sort of rhetorical device they use is, excuse us. We did not put him up here. You did. Your client did. That's the thing. Your client is on trial for committing a crime with this fellow here. So, of course, did he commit this crime with people who didn't commit crimes or who are not liars? So the only way, to catch a thief sometimes is with the testimony of the thief's partner. Right. So that will be the back and forth here. But the other thing, so they're going to really try to go after Michael Cohen as Trump has done publicly, perhaps in contempt of court. But there are other witnesses. That's the key thing.
That's
here.
Right.
David Pecker, who was the owner of the company, or the head of the company that owned National Enquirer, and the editor of the National Enquirer at the time, a guy named Dylan Howard, were both involved in setting up this payment. And
that's right.
And according to the documents in the Cohn case, Michael Cohn's case, they were in, at least David Pecker was in contact with Donald Trump about this. So he can presumably give testimony as to Trump's involvement and to whether this was being done as a campaign activity. In the search warrant for Michael Cohn, they cite at one point Donald Trump asking David Pecker, what does this mean for the campaign? And Pecker saying it's bad. So testimony like that, other possible witnesses are Hope Hicks, Trump's aide, maybe Kellyanne Conway. So these are people who would have been part of the discussions who could, if they tell the truth, perhaps reinforce whatever comes from Michael Cohen. So there'll be a lot of focus to Michael Cohen, but some of these, and we know his story. He wrote a book, he has a podcast, we have his account. What we hear from other witnesses may be more interesting, perhaps more surprising, if indeed we get to the trial itself. We still have a ways to go on the jury selection.
That's right. But may they all get to put their hands on Trump Bibles and swear to tell the truth. While I have you here, Mr. Corn, I began the show talking about Thomas Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene, arguably the two most pro-Vladimir Putin legislators in the House of Representatives, doing all they can do to terrorize Mike Johnson to prevent a Ukraine vote from ever hitting the floor. Your excellent newsletter, Our Land, your newest piece is called Sleepwalking Toward the Election. And in it, you talk about how Russia attacked us in 2016. They tried again in 2020. I mean, it's evident that Putin will take another stab at this in 2024, because this election will determine whether Putin gets to invade and keep Ukraine or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost become a forgotten footnote that Vladimir Putin attacked the election in 2016 to hinder Hillary Clinton and to boost Trump by stealing Democratic materials off DNC computers and from John Podesta, the chairman of the campaign. And then
that's it. Not a hoax. No hoax there. Really happened.
Working with WikiLeaks to release it, particularly in the last 3 weeks of the campaign. And that, you know, that was not the only thing that did in Hillary, but it was certainly one decisive factor. I don't see how anyone can look at this reasonably and not believe that Putin got what he wanted, but also that his efforts contributed to that. So they tried in 2016. In 2020, they tried again with Russian operatives giving information to Rudy Giuliani about, you know, false information about Biden and his son Hunter in Ukraine. And how do we know That's these right. are Russian operatives? Trump's own Treasury Department and his own office of the Director of National Intelligence both put out statements saying these people doing this are Russian intelligence agents. And so they were working hand in glove with Rudy Giuliani and other conservative players to smear Joe Biden. It didn't work, although it did give us in part the recent, I guess it's still happening, Republican impeachment crusade, the baseless crusade. So they tried there and it spread, and you have a lot of Republicans mouthing and aping and echoing this stuff, and they're basically, you know, acting as useful idiots for the Kremlin. And so in 2024, it's clear that the Russians are going to try something again. I mean, the stakes are higher if they can help put Trump in the White House. You know, Trump seems to, you know, have the position, it always changed with him, that he would cut off all funding assistance to Ukraine, which That's would right. allow, you know, Russia to basically win the war and maybe even run over and destroy Ukraine. I mean, it was not too long ago that, you know, Trump himself said, you know, Russia, you know, he'd be happy with Russia doing whatever the hell it wants to with
That's correct.
In Ukraine. So the motivation is even stronger there. And I've talked to some U.S. Officials and former officials who all say that, you know, Russian disinformation efforts have expanded greatly. Like right now, they're focused on the war effort more than anything else, and trying to get opposition to Ukraine funding intensified here. In fact, you had Michael McCaul,
That's
a
right.
top Republican member of the House, come out and say a week or so ago, that he hears his fellow Republican House comrades mouthing Russian disinformation on the House floor. So even a Republican saying this is happening, and it's not much of a pivot to go from doing what they're doing about Ukraine to focusing more on the 2024 election, which
yes, sir.
You know, might be better done, as they learned last time, or at least in 2016, more in the October timeframe. And with the advent of deep fakes and artificial intelligence, and with the complicity of right-wing media and right-wing Republicans, seems a real possibility that these guys, that the Russian cyber warfare units can put together a pretty potent and frightening campaign. So
that's it.
We're not talking
David,
about
we're out of time. I'm sorry. We're out of time. But next time you're here, I want to ask you about what if the Democrats had actually pursued Robert Mueller's 10 counts of obstruction of justice? And would this Russian nonsense still be happening if they picked up the ball on the impeachment front? Mr. Corn, thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure. Everyone needs to subscribe to the Hourland newsletter and Mother Jones magazine and read American Psychosis. Please come back and see us again very soon.
Thank you. Go to davidcorn.com to subscribe to the newsletter.
Always an honor, sir. We'll be right back in just a moment with your calls at 866-997-4748.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm John Fugelsang. This is SiriusXM Progress. Let's go back to the phones, shall we? Lee is on hold in Miami. Lee, thank you so much for your patience. Welcome. You're on SiriusXM.
Yeah, how you doing? Can you hear me?
I sure can. Thank you.
Yeah, I got 2 points before I hit. And then real quick, before I get those points, though, is there a way you can put in the word with Stephanie to do a sexy liberal show in South Florida? I mean, rather Fort
Lauderdale. Oh, man, you don't even know. I had so many people asking us about that over the weekend when we were in Minneapolis. We are trying. We've done the show in Fort Lauderdale a bunch of times. We're pushing hard for Miami, pushing hard for Orlando, hoping it happens this year. I'm trying to put enough drugs in her that I can coerce her into a few more dates. We're working on it, I promise.
All right. Well, all right. Real quick here. First thing is, I think it's rather rich for Mike Johnson to talk about them trying to vacate him for doing this job. But he's doing exactly the same thing to Mayorkas and even to President Biden. I mean, it's really rich for these guys.
Rich because Mike Johnson is helping this happen to Mayorkas, and he's expecting the Democrats to bail him out and keep him his job.
Yeah. It's just amazing, the hypocrisy of these people. And real quick, the Marjorie Taylor stuff, to be honest with you guys, and I know you have to report it. I get it. But like for Mike Cigarelli, or for really for Stephanie, I sometimes wait 30 minutes before I start listening. So when they play those clips of her, I can fast forward. But anyway, the second point I was trying to make is that.
Wait a second. How can you not love Marjorie Taylor Greene? I mean, she's maybe the greatest argument that evolution doesn't exist.
She makes me want to puke, to put it mildly. But anyway,
yeah.
The last point I wanted to make here had to do with the Latino, the constant Latino support that Trump still enjoys down here. Now, Broward County, which is the county above Miami-Dade, I mean, the Republicans don't even use their party affiliation when they run for office, local office. That's how much of a Democratic bastion that Broward County is. But in Miami-Dade County, the Latino, especially the Cubans and the Venezuelans, are still giving this man just support that is just inexplicable. I mean, because he don't give a damn about them, but yet I guess it's a status thing. That's what it is. It's
more. Well, hang on. Is it a status thing or is it an anti-abortion thing? We're talking about a lot of Catholic folks here, right?
That may play a part, but I really do think it's a status thing comes into it as well. I mean, because I attend the homeowners association meeting, and
yes.
There's a lot of Latinos that like to brag about their Mercedes and they're
I got
being
it.
A Republican and being a Republican. So
oh, God.
Some of them, it is a status thing.
Right. Materialistic, hard-working people who have pretenses towards wealth, and so they buy into Donald Trump's decades of bullshit.
Exactly, exactly. But yeah. But listen, ugh. I love your take, your biblical takes as well. I mean, they're
thanks,
unique,
man.
They're funny, and they're outstanding.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. I'm writing a book about it right now and trying to corral my rage every day. I really appreciate
it, man. Remember the Stephanie thing now.
I'll tell her. Listen, I told her the other night in bed. They want us in South Florida. We've never played Miami. We played Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm not supposed to tell that. Okay. She can get thrown out of the lesbian club. Hey, man, thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 866-997-4748 is our number here at the Love Fest. 866-997-GRIT. Allow me, if you would, to quote our next guest, one of my favorite people on the East Coast. Quote, "We are not going to convince the MAGA cretins to jump ship now. They've mortgaged their souls to get that dumb orange motherfucker back into office. Trump could impregnate a 10-year-old girl during one of his wannabe Nuremberg rallies and laugh because she can't get an abortion, and his idiot hordes would cheer his virility. They're gone. Forget about him for now. So it's about making sure that anyone opposed to Trump gets out and votes for Biden." Vulgar wisdom from the Rude Pundit, also known as Lee Papa. He's got tens of thousands of weekly readers, a regular guest on the Stephanie Miller Show, and over here, when we're lucky, New York Times called him a child of Lenny Bruce, Richard Pryor, and Hunter S. Thompson. And you can get more content from Lee on his Patreon under the username Rude Pundit. Rude, welcome back. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, too, and congrats on the tour. I'm glad the opening went well.
Went pretty good. Hoping that hopefully you'll get to come and join us at some of the East Coast dates.
I'm going to be there when you're in New York. I have already set the date aside. I wish I was. I you know what? I'd have maybe come to Philadelphia, but I'm going to be out of town. So enjoy Philly. But you got JoJo
Fingers,
and you got some other people.
JoJo there, so. And Lindy Lee, who I've never met before, and Glenn Kirshner, who owes me $20, but apparently they say he's a good guy. So we'll see.
That bastard owes me $20. Yeah.
Hey, listen, Lee, I want to say I hope you're enjoying not the first criminal trial of a president, but the first criminal trial of a president this year. What have you made of the jury selection so far?
It's interesting because, I went through jury selection on obviously not in a significant case, but I understand what they're doing now because they did it to me. When I was up for jury selection, it was a case that involved a worker suing his employer for some injury. And they looked me up on social media, and the lawyers looked me up, and the lawyers for the bosses said that they found stuff that I was too pro worker, and I and so they excluded me. And it was very funny because the lawyer, as I was leaving, one of the lawyers for the business owner leaned over to me as I was leaving and said, "Just keep up the good work." So I was like, okay, well, all right, that's very nice. I really kind of wanted to do the trial, but
I've never done one. I was the last time I was up for jury duty was many years ago in New York, and when I told them that years ago when I was very young, I had once encountered a woman who was beaten up by a drug dealer in my neighborhood, and I tried to intervene and got punched in the face. And the guy was arrested for assault 3, and they were like, "You're dismissed, sir." And now, because I was punched by a drug dealer once, I will never be allowed on a jury anywhere ever. So,
there are drug dealers. There are people that would pay drug dealers to do that.
Well,
it's a way
to
get out of jury duty.
I should go back in time and tell that to young me with a bloody lip. I mean, it's amazing watching. You said prospective jurors declaring they couldn't be fair in Trump's trial is both an encouraging example of Americans' respect for the fairness of the judicial system and an easy way of getting out of jury duty. I mean, I would imagine this is New York. This is Manhattan. No one wants to get found out for lying. They're going to just come out and say, "No, I hate this motherfucker. Don't put me on the jury."
Right, right. They are. They're going to say that. And I appreciate that honesty. And I think, when we have bullshit like, who was the representative that said, oh, if you're pro-Trump, you should lie, essentially, and get on the mm-hmm. jury to make it a hung jury, jury tampering through Twitter, then. But I appreciate that New Yorkers are going, no, fuck that guy. I don't want to fucking be on it. I don't want to fucking be on his jury. Fuck him. I don't want to. He's guilty. I know he's fucking guilty. Yeah. And although they sat six people today, so that's a third of what they needed. So that's
six people in Manhattan who don't have a fixed opinion on Donald Trump, Lee. Not easy to pull off.
No. Or, it's just everyone there. We keep forgetting that there is that enormous population that doesn't give a shit about Twitter and doesn't pay attention to any of the social media and. Just living their lives in blissful ignorance. I wish I could be like that.
But isn't that every society? You've got one third are conservative, one third are progressive, and one third are apathetic. That was America during the revolution.
Yeah, yeah. As long as we don't have that one third that wants to kill the other third, then I think we're okay.
Oh, we've got that. We have one third that would kill another third while the other third watched.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Donald Trump's social media posts are finally taking center stage in this criminal trial, both his filth social posts and, of course, his ghosts of tweets past. I think that's pretty exciting because it seems like Alvin Bragg is really trying to get the judge to do something about Trump pushing the bounds of his gag order. He put in a filing today that Trump violated the gag order and should be held in contempt over the posts that attacked Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. Lee, I don't think any judge is going to put this guy in jail for a weekend. I don't see it happening. I think Trump would use it as a fundraising bonanza.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, the $1,000 fine that's being proposed per violation. I mean, that's chump change for him. Or he'll just get it from the RNC to pay for it. And, it's just ridiculous that he can't be held to any normal standards of conduct. And it's kind of disgraceful. It was Michael Steele. Wasn't it Michael Steele who today, when Andrea Mitchell was saying, what happens if Trump is frog marched out in handcuffs or, and held for contempt of court? Won't that be a boon to fundraising? Won't that drive his supporters crazy? And Michael Steele said, why don't we try it and find out?
Let's do it. Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Let's
why don't we treat
it? I don't
like
mind Donald Trump raising a lot of money. E. Jean Carroll needs to go shopping. Let him raise money.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see what happens. I think the second he has handcuffs on him, and I don't know if you've ever had police handcuffs on you, but it's no fucking game. You realize, oh shit, I'm fucked. If I want to do anything, I'm fucked because I'm in these handcuffs. And I think he would crumble. I think that any kind of fake bravado that he had would just fade away in a heartbeat.
It seems like he really wasn't physically and mentally prepared for the act of having to sit still in a room for a few hours each day. I keep thinking about the executive time bullshit, Lee, when he was president, and how he would never come down and no one would see him before 12 noon. He'd be up in the quarters watching Fox News and eating Big Macs. It seems like for a guy with discipline and impulse control issues, this is going to be kind of torturous for him. I don't know if he's going to be able to contain himself and act like a 15-year-old.
Yeah, well, I mean, he already got called out, like you said, for talking within the earshot of the potential jurors today. He is somebody who needs to be the absolute center of attention. And if he's not the absolute center of attention, he doesn't give a shit about what's going on elsewhere. That's why every fucking meal at Mar-a-Lago has got to be people applauding him when he enters just to sit down at
so
a table and eat a ketchup laden, well done steak and an extra large slice of chocolate cake with two scoops of ice cream. It's just, what the fuck? When he walks into Mar-a-Lago, the patheticness of people having to have people line up and applaud as he enters, it's the desperation is just palpable.
Yeah, but on the bright side, I never knew how comfortable I was with my dick size until I watched Donald Trump as president, needing acclaim of strangers. Now, I think when you look at this actual case, there's evidence. We know what happened. Trump had Cohen pay off the porn star. It was an unreported illegal campaign contribution. And then he paid Cohen back. He conspired with him to cover it up as if it were legal services. His name is on the checks.
Yep.
I don't think he's going to go to jail, even though I doubt he'd ever express any remorse to a judge. He's a first-time offender. He's old. He's clearly not healthy. We'll probably be hearing more about how not healthy he is if there's a conviction. I mean, do you think this is going to be the sort of situation where he gets probation instead of jail?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think he's going to jail for this, because this is so ridiculous. And I think I might have even said it on here before, that this is the kind of case that if any other normal person would have pled guilty to some lesser thing, and it would have fucking gone away. But, you know, his inability to admit any error has put him in this situation. And, you know, I don't know what probation would be for him. What would he have to avoid doing in order to not violate his probation? Don't fuck a porn star and pay them off. I don't know.
I don't care. Like I've said for a long time, Lee, I don't care if he never goes to jail. I don't personally have the Schadenfreude gene. I need to see him in jail. What I want is a guilty verdict, and I want every Republican who has kids to explain why they're supporting a man who's been convicted of 34 felony counts. And I am so excited for high school students to learn all the details and minutiae of this trial, because you know high school and college kids will pay attention. They'll be talking about it in school. It's a major event. It's an historical first. Yeah. And I don't see anything that happens in this courtroom winning over the Nikki Haley Republicans, Lee.
No. And the other thing is that, you know, there have been polls that have said a conviction would actually move some people away from Trump. It's like they're waiting for that as an excuse to finally turn their back on him.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll follow through if it actually happens, but it might move the needle enough that just that psychological little tweak in what people think of him by having conviction in front of him instead of just charged could be enough.
That's going to be enough. There's going to be a lot of Republican voters who will not vote for him. And there's also going to be a lot who will tell pollsters they would not vote for him if he's a convicted felon and then vote for him anyway. It's really hard to guess.
Yeah, it is.
You don't see him testifying, do you?
No. I see him bragging about testifying and then saying his lawyers advised him not to. I mean, that's his modus operandi in this kind of stuff. I mean, he's a bullshitter. He's a bullshitter about everything. It's like him bragging that nobody know. What was it this week? This week, when somebody asked him about the FISA bill, he said, nobody knows FISA better than I do. And it's like, dude, just no, stop.
But literally, he was tweeting to kill FISA. I mean, on his website, which I'm now calling Wealth Disposal, he was tweeting to kill FISA, but he himself authorized this version of FISA in 2018.
Yeah. Well, you know, it doesn't fucking
matter. It's almost like he doesn't want spies from Russia to be punished by our government.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I was sorry. I'm just laughing because I realized I've been calling it Truth Toilet, and I'm realizing just how right that is now. That it's what's being flushed down the drain there. But I mean, you know, that you're also expecting them to understand some things and have knowledge, and any kind of anything beyond whatever he needs in the moment. And making a decision based on that. I mean, everything is just a button leading to a Diet Coke for him.
Do you care about these polls at all? Because I find them very hard to swallow. And I think they're all just landline polls and polls of white people who pick up their cell phones when they don't know who the caller is.
I don't give a shit about any polls really until September. And I keep saying that. I keep saying wait till September. And even then, you know, I mean, polls have been so often since 2016, at least, that no, I don't trust this. I also, not trusting the people that say they won't vote for Trump and then do vote for Trump. I also think there's a lot of people who say they won't vote for Biden who will end up voting for Biden. And
I think you're right.
Yeah. And so no, I mean, right now, this early out, no, it's bullshit. It's bullshit. But, you know, as more and more states see the consequences of Roe, as more and more states see the way in which, you know, the rights of LGBTQ people are being limited, as more and more states just keep having to come to terms about what it means to have a minority elected right wing leading the country, that I think that it's going to wake a lot of people up. And, you know, I just don't think that we have seen what the power is of that.
I think you're
not
right.
Yet awakement group is.
I think you're really right.
Wanted to end that more elegantly, but I just couldn't bring it home. It's sort of like when you're playing your guitar and you're trying to just finish that riff and you can't quite get it there.
I totally receive your meaning. Let's go to the phones, Lee. We have a lot of riffraff who want to say hi from our evil army of the night. Ron in California on line one. You're on with the Rude Pundit.
Ron!
Hey, Lee. John, thanks for taking my call. Lee, I have a quick question and a comment for you. My question is, how did you come up with your pen name, the Rude Pundit?
That's a good one.
That is interesting. Wow, we're talking 20 years ago now at this point. I think that it was just, I always tell the story, the sort of origin story is I read Al Franken's Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, which was
terrific
this
book.
Really, yeah, and a really smart attack on the right-wing media and right-wing politicians. And he just kept getting attacked. And he just kept getting called, you know, that he was lowering political rhetoric and he was being rude in the way he did it. Because, you know, he called Ann Coulter a cunt. He did other things in there. And I just thought, no, that's not lowering political discourse. That's not rude. Let me show you what that is. So I think that's why. And you know, the funny thing is that another reason I went with that is because it was supposed to be a multiple people writing the blog. And I was going to be Rude One. That's why it says Rude One on the bottom of my blog post. Because there was a Rude Two, a Rude Three, a Rude Four. But they bailed early because, you know, it was the early days of blogging and that's what people did.
Nice.
Oh, that's fantastic. And my comment is, John, is this is for everybody, but we take things for granted in our day-to-day lives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Lee. I look forward to every Monday morning at 6:35 because I know he's going to kick my week off. And then at 7:05 on Stephanie's show, we know we're going to get Eric Bowler. Well,
yeah.
a little over two years ago, Travis could not get a hold of Eric.
I know.
And Mama went on to something else, and we all know the reason why now. So, for people that are
the same week we lost Gilbert, by the way, the same week we lost Gilbert, that was a rough time.
Yes.
Well, and it was right after losing Kroz.
Yes. Yeah, so what I wanted to say is, people that are important to you, or people that you like, or in your lives, reach out to them. Let them know that you appreciate whatever it is they do, be it family, friends, or just somebody that you admire. Like I admire Lee. I appreciate his writing.
Right on.
And I've taken, and I told Lee this, I took individual journalism for granted for years. I would read an article. I thought nothing about it until these Trump years. And I realized how actually important that is, John. And the work that Lee does, and I'm glad he's able to monetize it. I hope everybody subscribes to his
Me too.
His Patreon page. It's fantastic. For as little as a dollar a month. So
I did
anyways,
not pay
I
Ron
I love
to
what
do
he
this,
does.
By the way, I did not pay Ron to do this.
And the thing is, Lee, I'm going to be 60. I'm heavily tattooed. I carry a chihuahua in a purse. Maybe that's not the fan base you were going for, but I'm all in.
No, that is the perfect fan base. I love that. I did not know you carried Archie around in a purse. That's awesome.
Nice.
I did the same with Zippy, and but no, I do. I mean, I support him, John. I throw him a couple bucks a month. His writing
nice.
Is amazing.
Good.
So. Anyways,
good.
I just wanted
everyone go to the Patreon.
Exactly. Go to the Patreon. And I just wanted to say thanks again, Lee, for everything that you do. And John, thanks for taking my call. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. We were at 866-997-4748. Look at you. They love you, man.
Ron's good people, and Ron's great. I mean, Ron, I love that Ron's a trucker, and occasionally he'll send me videos of, you know, being on the road and, you know, just the beautiful scenery he sees and stuff. And yeah,
that's great.
Terrific. By the way,
and as my brother Paul pointed out when I introduced my brother Paul to Lee, my brother pointed out 10 years ago, he's not very rude, is he?
That's right. Right now the post that I have up on Patreon is titled "It's Me, I'm the One That's Aborting All the Babies After They're Born."
Yes, you read my mind. Now, for those who don't subscribe to your Patreon, this is a very tantalizing headline. What is the piece about? If there's ever a time to join, it's to find out how you're actually the one who's aborting all the babies after they're born. Because Donald Trump has told us.
I received an email from someone after I posted something on Threads about how I thought it was a big lie. And they reached out to me to say, nope, they're the ones. They get to go around. They have to go around. And when somebody needs a baby aborted after birth, they're supposed to do it.
And not really an abortion. That's more of a baby assassin, isn't it? I mean, what Donald Trump talks about happening when he says the mother and the doctor wrap the baby in swaddling clothes and then they kill it. That's not abortion. That's assassination, which I'm not necessarily against being a dad.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the baby won't notice. I mean, you know, it's not like they're a grown person that they're making life and death decisions for.
Lee, most of us have been really anxiously wondering how John Bolton's going to vote this year. And I have to say, I think it's great that John Bolton came out and revealed that he actually voted for Dick Cheney the last time and is voting for Dick Cheney this time, because let's be honest about our beloved friends on the left. Sometimes people we love, people we respect, they'll see a conservative calling out Donald Trump and they'll think the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Yes. And that's why I've seen liberals get in bed with so many people they shouldn't get in bed with. They're like Britney Spears with an ideology. How did you feel when hero of the left, John Bolton, came out and said he'd voted for Dick Cheney?
And that he's going to do it again. Implying that he would do it again.
He did.
He'll write in Cheney. And it's like, well, you know, Thanks for all the shit about Donald Trump, and now you can go fuck yourself, you know? go fuck yourself with your big-ass mustache. It's just, you sit there and you see these people on the right who say they're taking this mighty stand against Trump and then refuse to do the one thing that would actually prevent Trump from becoming president again, which is voting for and supporting Joe Biden. Not doing that means that your stand is bullshit, you know?
That's it. As you put on Threads, if you don't help elect the only candidate who has a chance to beat Trump, if you just toss your vote in the shitter, you can go fuck yourself. And I think you say it succinctly there.
Yes, yes. I'm much more succinct when it comes to posting things.
What's going to happen with RFK Jr.? He came out this week and said that Donald Trump had offered him to be his VP and he turned it down. Is it okay for me to say that I find that a little hard to believe?
I do. I agree with you. Which part do you find hard to believe? That Trump offered it or that it was turned down?
That Trump offered it in the first place.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that would be weird because you'd think that Trump would brag about that. And make a big deal about it. And
no, Trump's attacking him full time now. Trump's attacking RFK Jr. all day now.
Right. Which shows that they've got some polling that show that the RFK, you know, anti-vax candidacy with his anti-vax running mate is going to hurt Trump. But that's been my thought all along. I don't see many liberals jumping ship to say, yeah, I really love his environmentalist stands, and I really I'm really anti pandemic, but I can put that aside to vote for RFK Jr. I'm okay with having another pandemic come through and kill a couple million people.
By the way, speaking of vice presidents, before we go, word just came in that Bob Graham, ex-U.S. senator and Florida governor, has died at the age of 87. Lee, I always thought if John Kerry had asked Bob Graham to be his running mate instead of Senator Breckgirl 20 years ago, I think they would have taken Florida and they could have taken out Bush. I've always thought so.
It was one of the, it was just one of the dumbest moves, you know. That's why you get a, that's why you get a running mate, to shore up something that you don't have. That's why Obama chose Biden. Let me get that old white guy credibility in there that can make white people feel at ease.
That's why JFK chose LBJ and Hillary Clinton chose Tim Kaine to be the likable older dad figure, I guess.
Well, and Lee, also to maybe try to secure Virginia, you know.
Maybe. Lee, thank you for joining us as always. What's the best way for our listeners to follow you, sir?
You can always read me on the blog, rudepundit.blogspot.com. You can follow me on Threads at Rude Pundit, the Rude Pundit on Facebook, at Rude Pundit on Instagram. And once again, and I'll just repeat what Ron said, starting at $1 a month, Rude Pundit on Patreon.
Amen. Thank you so much. Love your work. Come back and see us again next week if you're around.
Love it. Thanks.
Thank you, Lee. Quick break. We'll be right back with your calls at 866-997-4748. This is Progress.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
This is SiriusXM Progress. We are at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. Bill is on the line from Oregon. Bill, thank you for waiting on hold. You're on Progress.
It's Phil. Pete, like,
oh, Phil. Hi, Phil. Hello.
Hi. I got a nickname for Trump.
Okay, I can barely hear you. Speak into the phone a little. Speak into the phone a little more directly. Let me, so I can hear you well.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
About that. Can you hear me?
You
now?
Got it. Yes, sir.
Okay, I got a nickname for Trump, the Tangerine Turd Bucket, because he stinks.
Tangerine Turd Bucket. It's very Seussian. I like it. I like it very much. It rolls off the tongue like a children's book. I like it.
A little alliteration, you know.
Hey, man, I love it. I mean, I like Grift Weasel, like I said. I like a Fredo and a family of Fredos, old fat King Joffrey Baratheon with decades of untreated syphilis. That's not very catchy, but I like the imagery there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could spend all day just coming up with more names to call Donald Trump because it's doing the Lord's work.
Yes, I have to admit, though, Don Snorlean, whatever, I can't talk today, but Snorleano is pretty good.
Not bad. I also call him a truculent pus cluster. I've called him Putin's petulant prison punk, malignant yeast fungus, a mendacious orc stool. I've called him a less moral, less honest, less healthy, less likable Nixon, and that oversaturated knob. I have many, many Trump names that are dear to my heart.
Right. Well,
Tangerine Turd Bucket's right up there.
Yeah, I appreciate everybody calling in with the nicknames. It's pretty, you know, he deserves it.
We got to do a whole night of this. We got to do a whole night where I ask everyone to call in with their favorite nickname. Or we don't because he's not going to be president again. And it's a waste of our time. Let's just view it that way. I don't give him too much airtime.
Just hope if we could not hear about him, see him, or anything about him would be just terrific.
I do think that people are going to be really sick of this guy again by the time Election Day rolls around. We've seen a lot of real amnesia, you know, people who just don't remember how corrosively sinister he was. And that's fine. I think they'll get their reminders over the next 6 months. I really do.
Well, I just went to a candidate's forum with Janelle Bynum, who you've had on.
Yeah.
And McLeod Skinner. And it's one of those things where no matter what, as a voter or living in the 5th District, if either of them win, we win. So yep. We've got two good candidates.
And you're lucky. That's great. Oh, my God. We got to get through one. We just got to get through this year. Just got to make it to Thanksgiving. This will all be over.
I think not. We need to make it another 1932 or another 1964, really. I mean,
I would agree with that. I would totally agree with making it another 1932 if we could elect a great progressive and have him serve 4 terms. I'm all over it. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate the call. 866-997-4748 is our number over here. 866-997-GRIT. I think I have some time. Stephen in Kentucky, are you there?
I'm calling tonight because I have a few words to say tonight. I understand Secretary Clinton listens to this program. Is that correct?
She won't stop calling me, bro.
Well, I supported her in the past. I appreciate her efforts on behalf of children's rights over the years, being mm-hmm. a pioneer in that movement. And she's mm-hmm. made some strides with human rights as well over the years. But what I take offense to is when she gets on that talk show the other day and says we should just get over it. It's between Trump and Biden. Excuse me. Why should we take her word for it? It's partially her fault that Trump ascended to power to begin with. I mean,
how is it her fault?
Totally her fault, but it is partially her fault because it was the lesser of two evils. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, but I think Hillary Clinton did more to keep Donald Trump from being president than anybody else in the country. She worked harder at keeping him from president than I did.
Electoral College? No, she didn't. Let's not kid ourselves.
Okay, I don't think she tried to lose. I think there's a lot of reasons why she didn't win, but I get what you're saying.
I didn't say she tried to lose. I say she was graceful in conceding. Yes, she was. And yes, okay. She probably would have done a hell of a lot better of a job in terms of Supreme Court appointments, too. But let me make
I'm still blaming people like James Comey, Vladimir Putin. I still have a lot of other people I'll blame before.
I did not say that they were not responsible either, but I'm not going to sit here and live in a fool's paradise and not actually point out everything, the whole damn picture.
I'm sorry, Stephen, did I call you at a bad... I'm sorry, did I call you and make you come on my show at a bad time? I didn't mean to upset you.
You're not upsetting me. I'm upset at her for this.
Okay.
Because, actually, I did like her at one time. I had a lot of respect for her, but I don't appreciate somebody telling us that we should just grin and bear it. No, I'm sorry. When this man is this lunatic might get back in there again, and I'm sorry, this age issue is still around Biden's
so
neck.
What? So you're mad at Hillary for saying it. Who's the
Who is the
Democrat? So what should Hillary Clinton have said? She should have said, ex-Democrat needs to challenge Joe Biden right now that the primaries are ending? What should she have said, Stephen?
What she could have said is she could have encouraged more candidates to get involved in these. You said so yourself earlier tonight that if they had more of a field in the Democratic primary instead of that opportunist Dean Phillips and I like Marianne.
But if she
Williams,
says that, Stephen, I love you so much. If she says that, then they're all going to say she's not being loyal to Biden. She's a sore loser. She looks
maybe
bad.
That's the problem.
They're going to go after her no matter what she says.
What I'm saying is, how is that any different from the other side to a degree? Because they're all with Trump hook, line, and sinker, so we're going to sit here and play this game, too, about being loyal. What's more important at this point in time is taking a step back and seeing the bigger picture. I don't give a damn about loyalty to this point. I'm more focused on not being on a sinking ship, and that's
same
what we
here.
Should be focused on.
And well, showing doubt about Biden's about Biden's chances to win right now doesn't help Biden win right now. She's got to be on a team and on message like Gavin Newsom. So I totally get why she said what she did. And I totally get why it frustrated you, my friend. I'm so sorry, but we are out of time. Call us back later. We'll talk more, Stephen. Thank you to Thea Harper and to Chris Housel for putting up with me and my rough and rowdy ways. Thank you to the great Rude Pundit. Thank you, Keith Price, trapped on a subway somewhere and couldn't join us. And thanks to David Korn. Guys, you've all been great. The God Squad is back tomorrow. Keep it tuned to Progress all day long. Thank you for listening. I'm John Fugelsang. Peace.